Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is another fantastic IT Babble podcast. It's been a little while, but this is definitely worth it. In our last IT Babble podcast, Tony talked about his iPad setup strategy. And I was a little dubious. But he's going to take us through the details because it is a reality. And he's going to talk us about how he uses iPad with their current, you call it a high flex situation, yeah, right?
That's right. A high flex or hybrid teaching environment. And I did take time to make a video to document the whole process. So make sure the video is linked up with this kind of Q&A commentary, because it's really hard to get people together for Q&A. So I thought this would be a good way to, for you, Patrick, to ask your question. Since you were a skeptic, you were an iPad skeptic.
Yes. And still am to a little bit. I watched your video. It's a really good video. Answers lots of questions, but I do have some more questions that we will tackle in this very special high flex podcast.
Yeah, so I didn't come up with that term. Somebody came up with it, and then they started calling it that at my school. So first, like, what does it mean? It means that every section of class, so every time students meet with the teacher, a percentage of the students are at home. So it's not like the teacher is in an office and all the kids are at home or something like that. And it's not asynchronous. It's all synchronous.
Okay.
All the time.
And so
that means
– all right. So it's, yeah, it's not like, okay, we have – Group A is coming to school Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Group B comes to school Tuesday, Thursday. It's not that. These kids are kind of, for whatever reason, are choosing to stay home or choosing to come to school. Their families are making that decision, right?
Well, the way the schedule actually works is if you take Group A, half of them come to school and half of them join at home.
Okay.
On the same day. So that's why there's always kids at home and kids at school. And then Group B kids are the Group A kids that stay home, and then they come to school. And the Group A kids that came to school go home. It's all about having fewer students on campus simultaneously. And then in that mix, there are also students who are virtual all the time.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So it's crazy. It's crazy. That's it. So it's like accommodating nearly every type of enrollment, and that was what I was asked to do. How can we accommodate every type of enrollment?
Oh, right.
And I said asynchronously, and they said no, the parents will get mad. So
it is. It's tough. I know there is a high school here in Indianapolis, a private high school, and they have completely retrofitted their rooms, and their solution per room. I'm ballparking here, but I have a very good knowledge of what was in the room because I've talked to the vendor who completed the job. I'm going to guess that they're probably putting around $6,000 of technology in every room. Not every room. Like, it's not in the gymnasium. It's not, maybe probably not in the library, but it's in every maybe classroom.
So let me talk about costs, cause I can break the cost down. When you use this kind of model that I'm using, you've got two options. The first option is, do you want your teachers to be able to move around the room freely? Meaning, if they have laptops, do you want them to be able to move around the room?
Okay.
If you do, you have to ensure that the room has wireless projection. So if you don't have an Apple TV, a Barco or Solstice or something like that in each room already, you would have to add that. But it's not required. You could just plug the computer into a cable and set it on the desk.
Yeah.
This will still work. So if you want wireless projection, you've got to add that cost if you don't already have it. So let's take the projection cost out for now, because that is varied and people do it different ways.
Yeah.
The cost of doing this particular process is you need an iPad, and you can use older iPads. So if you want, you can go onto websites and buy used or refurbished iPads if you want to get cheaper ones. But for about $300, you get the iPad. The stand that I'm recommending and the clip are about $100 together.
Okay.
You also can buy these really nice iPad stands that are like $160, but they are heavier and they are also hard to get right now. So I actually implemented a microphone stand with a special holder that musicians use to hold iPads. And then in addition to that, in every classroom, I also added a podium. It was like a $30 podium. It's like a plastic podium, and the tray rotates 360 degrees. And the reason I added that was so that the teachers could raise their laptops up to about mid-chest height so that their diaphragm was more in line with their microphone, and it's on a big reflective surface. And so when they speak, walking around the room, it actually started, you know, worked really well to bounce that audio, bounce that sound back into the computer microphone. And we experimented with lots of different mics at different distances and stuff. I did controlled experiments with like six different types of microphones that were not on your body. Like these are, you know, just free to move around the room.
Yep.
And simply adding a podium, a cheap podium that is about the height of a person's diaphragm, so it has to be adjusted, it worked just as well as much more expensive solutions. So if you add the podium to help with the audio, the laptop positioning, you're looking at another $30. So you're looking at $300, $400, $430. And if you want a really, really nice iPad, I guess you could go up to about $700 total. So you can do this fairly affordably. And I was looking at cameras, and some of these cameras people were recommending were like $800 to $1,000 minimum, low end.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they all had to be cabled specially to get full resolution, full audio. They needed an Ethernet drop. And I was like, man, this is going to be really expensive. And then I'm like, wait, can the teacher take this camera home and use it easily?
Yeah.
How are we going to support these things when they go down? Like, it just got really complicated. And so I did a survey and I found out that around 30% of our teachers already had an iPad at home or knew how to use an iPad. So I'm like, that right there is enough for me. Like, and then we have an MDM. We use a free MDM. We use Configurator, but it's set up on a server so we can access it on and off campus if we need to, so the iPads can get their apps at home. But we're not paying for an MDM. However, if you spend a little bit of money and you get the new version of Jamf in the cloud, it's not very expensive and it's amazing. And so it's better, I think, than Configurator. So Jamf in the cloud for a lot of schools would be affordable. I think it's like $5 a device a year.
That's very reasonable, yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty cheap. So if you don't have an MDM, you will need one. So if you don't have someone who can really use Configurator, I mean, they would need to be an expert, then go for Jamf in the cloud, and that's $5 a device, really, a year. So if you had 200 iPads, you'd be $1,000. But you're probably going to be looking at an iPad per classroom. So 60 classrooms is only another $300 for the software. So now if we take all that and add it up, and let's just round up the hardware cost to $600, software cost, you're still under $1,000 per room.
All right. So I'm going to stop you real quick. I'm going to go through just the highlights of what this high school put into their room and just kind of ballpark cost. Okay. So they have a high definition PTZ camera, which is the PTZ stands for pan, tilt, zoom. It's something that's pretty universal. It doesn't matter who makes the camera, Sony or Samsung, it doesn't matter, PTZ. And this is very high resolution. I don't know if the one is 4K, but it's definitely 1080p or HD. And the thing that makes it so expensive, and I think it's around $1,200, is that the zoom on it is at like a 12-time optical zoom, which if you know anything about zooms, that is a tremendous amount of zoom. And it's optical, not digital, so that means the image will not get pixelated, it won't degrade, the image will just look really good. And they can control it with their computer or with a remote control. And they're fairly small, but you're talking, we're at $1,200 right now, just with the camera. Just with the camera. Then there is a microphone array by a company called Neriva. And I'm just going to call Neriva out on this. I'm not calling them out. I'm just naming them because I don't know of another company that makes something like this. And it is a sound bar which doubles as a microphone array, and it is around 6 feet long. So it is very long, and it's around maybe 8 inches tall. It's big.
Yeah, Crestron makes one of those.
Crestron probably does. And anywhere you walk in the room, this is going to pick you up. It's I've actually tried it. It's pretty magical. So here's what's not so magical about the Neriva. It is starts around $2,000 and goes up to almost $2,000 to $3,000 depending on the size you get. So right now you're at over $4,000, and those are the kind of like the, and then they have various various receivers and transmitters to make everything run very smoothly and reliably. And we're not going to get into those stuff. But right there, those are your two big things. You have a $1,000 camera, which can zoom in and see very, very clearly. I guess my concern with the iPad is the camera good enough on the iPad? Because, I mean, it's meant to be, I'm holding it, I'm taking a picture of something that's pretty much right in front of me. Would it be good enough to capture, say, what's on a whiteboard, say, 6 feet away?
Yeah, so the iPad camera is good enough. And the thing is, I don't know about 6 to 8 feet away, but it doesn't have to be that far because the iPad is fully portable. So the teacher can position it anywhere in the room that they want. And you get pretty decent quality. We have some fairly large math rooms with like three large whiteboards, and the teacher places the iPad so it's fairly close to each board and just kind of has a student rotate it, or the teacher just kind of shifts it as they write. It stays on the same kind of plane, and it just like rotates, you know, to the left or to the right, so it doesn't tilt, and it captures the whiteboard. And the students at home have said it's good. The other thing too is it's kind of weird, but like unless you're having a conversation, staring at the classroom isn't really very effective. Like you need to be able to look at other things in the room. So we had this one teacher who really hated the iPad, and I was like, okay, I'm going to swap this out. We're doing really well on the budget because we didn't spend a lot per room. So I'm just going to like get you a good camera for your classroom. And the next day he came up and he was like, don't order that camera. And I'm like, why not? He's like, well, I had a physics lab, and that's when I just kind of clicked in my head. And I grabbed the iPad and I went over and ran the physics lab with the stand, and the kids at home could see it. And if you get me a camera, even if it's really good, how are they going to be able to see my lab? Because the room is two spaces. It's like a teaching space and a lab space. And he's like, he put the iPad like up high, like the stand goes up like about 5 or 6 feet. And then he put it on a platform so he could put it up above the lab and like shine it and point it down, point that lens down, and the kids at home could see it. And if you flip the iPad around, you can actually watch the kids at home. You can watch their faces on the side while they're watching the lab, which is kind of cool. So in that sense, like, it's kind of like it's good enough. The quality is good enough, but the flexibility is really where I've found it to be like winning out. And we don't have to say iPad. I tried this out too with like a Chromebook tablet by the 10E.
Yeah.
Really good. And I was like, man, I'm going to buy these. And they're like, no, you're not, because they're out of stock for next year.
Yeah, they're
out. So, because I actually wanted to do that, because I'm like, this has Google Meet integrated. It's very easy to use.
Yeah.
But the other thing with the iPad, and I'll let you ask another question. I'm rambling a bit here. As I deployed these, the demands started coming in, like what people wanted to do with it. And I was kind of waiting and waiting to see what the big thing was going to be. And the big thing was really to make the iPad a little bit more friendly in the room, like use it more as a, like almost like a talking head. So it's like with the, because you can move it around. So it's closer to groups. So like you get a group of like five kids in the room, you put the iPad with them, And now they're doing group work with the five kids who are at home. And that was mostly in the lower school where there are fewer kids at home. But I thought that was really interesting, where it was really about facilitating that group conversation. And in that case, because the iPad is away from the speakers, you can turn the audio on. So now the iPad is just kind of like a, like we're doing here. Like it's like using Skype with a small group. And I don't think you could do that with any of those fixed camera systems.
Or with the fixed array, the microphone array, as good as it, as incredible as it is, it picks up everything, everything.
And I decided to take the ultimate test. So after deploying the iPads for about 2.5 weeks, I sent an email out to the entire school and said, if you don't like your iPad, I will replace it with a camera. And I had no takers.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. I'll stop rambling.
Okay. Go. No, not rattling at all. Another concern I have is iPads, especially if they're older iPads, battery life is a concern, because when you, like the iPad overall has great battery life. Even if it's 3 or 4 years old, chances are the battery life is still very good. The problem is when you start doing something like Google Meet or Zoom or Teams, that really draws a lot of power to video chat back and forth. I mean, you're not just like surfing the web or checking email or watching an occasional YouTube video. Now it's really using the processor quite a bit, and it can. I'm concerned if you're using an iPad and you're, let's say you're teaching a high school class and you've got three classes in a row and they're about an hour each. That's 3 hours of continual streaming. I wonder if an iPad could sustain that type of usage over that period of time without dying.
So the answer is no. The answer is no. And I did test the iPad, not just one. I had like 4 or 5 of these things in my house for a month, just doing all kinds of research on power consumption, how it would work. So basically the iPad can stream for about 2.5 to 3 hours if it's not plugged in at all. But if it's plugged in a fixed position, then obviously there's not really an issue. However, the question really is, how often do teachers move the iPads around? So what most teachers do is they start the class with the iPad as a normal camera, as you would with any fixed camera. So for the first 15 minutes of class, it's fixed and it's on the power. Then that's when they'll start moving around, going to the whiteboard, moving back and forth. And then the last 10 minutes or so, it's docked back. So it's getting intermittent charging. And that seems to work. But the main issue has been that the standard little Apple charger that comes with the iPad has a hard time charging the iPad while it's streaming. Like, it can maintain the charge, but it can't exceed it. So we did some experimenting, and we found that what we needed to do was, there were some additional chargers that we purchased, but not for everybody. So this was maybe about, I don't know, maybe a fourth or less than a fourth of teachers. And then we got some different cables as well. And the cables are actually really cheap. You can get like, you can get them very affordably. They're made by another company. I think it's like $26, and you get something like 12 cables in a pack. And these cables are thicker and longer, and they let the teacher move the iPad around a little bit more, but they seem to produce a better charge. The cable alone seems to make it better than the standard Apple cable. So we added those to rooms where people were really, really mobile with iPads. And then in a few other spaces, like where drama and places like that, where they're very mobile and the iPad's in the center of the room, we actually gave them a larger power brick that can charge the iPad while it's streaming. So, but that wasn't really for everybody, and we had some of that stuff on hand. So if you're looking at, like, if you factored in an extra – in that price I threw out, maybe let's just say per room, it's like $700 to $800. If you threw in an extra $20 a room as a budget, you're not going to use that in every room. So it kind of adds up. You would have enough left over to enhance the charging if you needed to.
Okay. All right. That is all right. Okay, so most of the time it's going to be under power then. Most of, and then when a teacher needs to move it, they can.
Right.
All
That's
right.
right.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. I want to go back to audio real quick because the reason why I use a microphone when we do our podcast and not the microphone on my computer is because the microphone on my computer is garbage. Because the microphone on computers is garbage. A microphone on phones and tablets, it doesn't matter if it's Apple or not, is typically garbage if you're not right on top of it, like a foot away from it. Is the audio good enough for this scenario? I mean, if it, I'm trying to think that the teacher's at the whiteboard writing, maybe explaining a concept, and they're maybe three, they're like 4 feet away from an iPad, and they're facing, every now and again they're talking, but they turn away from the iPad. They're talking into the board. Can
Okay, yeah. So on the laptop, and we have both Apple and Windows laptops, on the laptop there is a webcam as well. So in the meeting with the student has two cameras to choose from. They can choose the iPad camera or they can choose the webcam. So the students actually can choose what they want to see. So when I was showing the teachers different models, like different ways to use the technology, I had this podium, which I mentioned before, and I put my laptop on it. And because I'm working at the board, I'm like up there working, the iPad's watching me. I'm being very traditional. I'm using a whiteboard. A lot of teachers just want to use a whiteboard. I'm using the whiteboard, iPad's on me. I rotate my laptop around so my webcam is now facing the classroom. So the students at home can actually watch the kids in the classroom. And they can watch the board. The podium acts kind of like a cup, like if you were to cup your hands and put them around your ears. And it focuses the sound and bounces it right into the microphone. Now, I had to experiment with this quite a bit, but it works better than you think. So, what I modeled for the teachers was directionality, like, place your laptop in the right place. Now, because of social distancing in most classrooms, there's only one or two spots they can put their podium.
Yeah.
So, and then I'm like, make sure it's high enough so that you're projecting and you have to project. Like, you need to speak clearly. And we did have some people who, because of masks or face shields, had a really hard time speaking clearly or enunciating. So, for those people, we ended up reinforcing them with microphones. And I went really old school with microphones. I went with old school, like Bluetooth headsets that you wear, like when you're talking in your car.
All right.
And those were also very affordable. Depending on what you want, they range from like $30 to $50. And there weren't that many takers. Like, we could have given them to everybody, but I think we only ended up outfitting like 15 teachers who wanted them. And once you do that, you really just adjust the input output system on your laptop so that it's capturing audio when the teacher speaks from the Bluetooth microphone, but still playing the audio out, mixing the teacher's audio out and the students at home audio out into the room so they can ask questions. And so we did that for teachers that needed it. But yeah, that was my biggest worry. That was absolutely my biggest worry. But in general, people have been quite happy with it. And I did mention that, if we add anything to a room, whatever it is, that's another thing in the room. That's another thing everybody has to learn to manage, to take care of, to support. And it's for the teacher too. I mean, if you have a microphone, even if it's built into the room, and the audio stops, the teacher has to learn how to do things to get the audio back. So I kind of created these levels, like level one, day one, go into your classroom, don't use the iPad, use your laptop, and make sure that you can use your laptop to stream and incorporate your students at home. Day two or three, introduce your iPad and get that working. Day five to seven, ask yourself if you need a microphone, and if you do, let us know, and we'll get it going. I even tried some Bluetooth and some wired pressure zone microphones, PZMs. They're little discs that are used in conference rooms. And those are actually pretty good. And those I found to be the most effective. But once teachers saw how mobile the setup was, they were always moving stuff around. And whenever they would move their laptop around or their iPad, then the microphone had to be adjusted, and they wouldn't adjust it. So
yeah,
that became like a problem. So they had like a really good quality microphone, and those PZMs can range from like $50 to $500. They're very good quality.
Yeah.
But I just kind of stopped going that direction, because every time I would go into a room and there was a problem, the PZM would be like behind the teacher. They'd moved it. They'd unplugged it from its USB. They turned it off. So I'm like, I'm just gonna keep working with them on projection and adjusting their laptop to capture their sound. And this particular podium, I found it because it was used by DJs. And I was like, maybe DJs are using this because they like to scream and like tell people to, you know, celebrate or whatever. And maybe this thing enhances their audio a bit accidentally. Because I didn't know why it was so popular for DJs. But so that's what we went with.
Nice.
And
all right.
It would be awesome. Like, my buddy Phil was like, dude, you need this thing from Shure. It's a plate that goes in the ceiling, and it captures like the whole room. It's amazing. It has 8 simultaneous streams, Tony. You can stream 8 audio streams over the internet separately or blend them together. I was like, how much is it? He's like, $3,000. I was like, he's like, and that's just for the speaker. That's not for the unit that needs to operate it. So yeah, he was really excited, but I'm like, no, I can't do that. So I, you're right. I mean, give me another grand and I would make the audio a lot better, but I still would keep the iPad.
Yeah. Okay. And I think you bring up a really good point with this setup is this stuff. When COVID is over, you can find another use for those iPads. Like they're not just sitting around and people are like, what do I do with this now? What do I do with this PTZ camera that has 12 times optical zoom mounted to the ceiling in the corner of my room when everybody's back in the room? Kind of a thing.
Right. Right. And we already have teachers asking for apps. They're like, can I have apps for my iPad? I'm like, yeah, you can have whatever you want.
Yep.
Now, we do have the iPads managed. There's no Apple ID on them. The teachers cannot mess with them. We have to – the reason we're doing that as well is we're not putting apps on the iPad that could potentially impact the streaming if they try to run them simultaneously. So we do review each app, and if a teacher wants something heavy, we go meet with them and say, hey, when you want to use this, you can invite the kids, like explain everything. When teachers use that, they don't need Google Meet on at the same time. The kids can join, explain everything.
Okay.
They join that directly. So like, you shouldn't do both of those things at the same time, because unless you have a brand new iPad, it's not going to handle it. And even then, I mean, think about it. Like, explain everything is completely contained. It's got your microphone. They can see everything. They don't need to like see the classroom because they're using explain everything at home. So in those cases, we do have to kind of make certain that the teacher understands the implication. But most apps are pretty light, you know.
Yeah, they are.
And so when teachers are like, yeah, add this app so I can use it, and they'll pull the app up on the iPad, they'll share the iPad screen, the kids at home can see it, it's projected up on the projector, kids in the classroom can see it. So I think overall, no one's going to want to give their iPads back. I think they're all going to want to keep them to use for different things.
All right, I've got a question about logistics, and I know the answer to this already because I've watched the video and we've talked about this before, but this is more for our listeners out there. Is, okay, so you have an iPad in the classroom. It's streaming. How you have the teacher who has their computer in the classroom. The computer is also streaming, but you can't stream from two different devices on the same account. How can you get two streams going?
Right.
How does that work?
So the iPad is a person in your classroom. And what that means is that each iPad has a Gmail account and password assigned to it. Those Gmail accounts are inside of an OU and G Suite. that is limited. It doesn't have everything. It just has what it needs. And what the teacher does is they go into their calendar and they set up their reoccurring meeting. They invite their students, and then they add the iPad as a student. So the iPad is signed in, and when you open the Meet up on the iPad, the app, it shows all the meetings the iPad is joining that day. And so that's how it works. And so the students can see the iPad and the teacher, and they know what the iPads are because the iPad account names are set up so that everybody knows it's an iPad. And they know that that is the camera. And that's how it works. And the cool thing is, if you wanted to incorporate three or four cameras in a room in a Google Meet so the students could actually switch between all of them to get different perspectives, you could do that with this method.
Very clever. That's actually really clever. That's really good. I think that's I think that makes it super flexible, where you can add and take away cameras very easily just by bringing in another iPad and another Google account or Microsoft or Office 365 account. That's really clever.
And if you are using Google Classroom, Google Classroom makes a meeting link at the top. You just add your iPad as a student.
Nice.
And so you don't even have to use the calendar. So it works. It works. It works pretty well. And I am doing my recording today with you on an iPad, and it has 10% power left.
Oh, nice. I only have one more question that I can think of here. Is in our school, we didn't do this. We don't have a virtual option. Everybody's back at school kind of thing. We didn't offer a virtual option. We're a fairly small school, and we only go up to middle school. And anyway, we have our reasons, and it works for us. We got everybody a new document camera, though. And so, you know, I mean, and it's a very, the document camera, it's a little bit cheaper than an iPad. It's very flexible as far as how it can be positioned, and the picture of it is really good. Now, it does have a microphone on there, and I will say that the microphone is awful. It's just terrible. It's worse than the microphone on your smartphone or tablet or computer. It's really bad. But the video, the lens on it and the video quality is actually very, very, very good. Why not maybe, you know, let teachers use a document camera instead of, because this thing can point up. You can point it at a whiteboard. You can there's zooms on it. It has a pretty good zoom. It's fairly portable. You just need to plug it into a computer.
So we do have some teachers using document cameras. Here's the main issue. Like, first off, if you're on Apple right now, like if you're on Catalina, you probably noticed that some of your document cameras stopped working, and they still haven't made software for them. So the software that you're using is third party. And what we've found is that in the classroom, it's great. You just share the screen, but once it streams out and gets to the students at home, there's quite the delay. So I had some math teachers switch from document camera to explain everything software, not iPad, just they're using the iPad with a pen. But the problem was that the delay from the document camera through the stream was bad. And also the quality. So the maximum streaming quality of the Meet that we're using right now is like only 720. So if you're using software that's streaming at a higher res, I guess it's fine. But that document camera's resolution gets stepped down in order to meet the streaming quality. It's not like you can push 4K over 720.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the biggest challenge that we've had with the document cameras. It's just a delay. Whereas because the iPad is a person in your room, when the iPad uses the camera and shares the screen or whatever, it's direct. It's like from the iPad straight into the stream. So there's no delay. So you may not get the amazing like detail that you get with the document camera, or like a fairly good document camera, but you get the real-time interactivity. So you don't have the lag. Now, I've been thinking a lot about document cameras lately, and I, at first I was like, no, document cameras ever again, forget it. And actually at my previous school in Korea, that's how the elementary school wanted it. They were like, we don't want document cameras. We just want iPads with stands because it's the most flexible solution. But I think the rule should be, you should not buy document cameras that are more expensive than iPads.
Yeah. Yeah. So our document cameras, and they were on sale when we got them, they're around $260. I think now they're back up to $300, but that's around the price of an iPad. And it's, and we looked, the thing is we had to wait a good month before we got them. And now they are sold out completely, like from this one particular vendor. Like they have no document cameras at all. They range anywhere in price from like $80 all the way up to like beyond $300. And that's right. And that's like that. Even if you look at the Elmos have document cameras that start around $100, $150, and they go up to $1,300.
Right. And that's my problem. My problem is the Elmo that's like $600 to $1,000. And I'm looking at a classroom and I'm like, I could give you an iPad and a smaller document camera for that price.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's kind of what I'm against at this point in terms of expenditure. I had a science teacher come up to me and she was like, look, I have all these cool little small document cameras and I can do a lot of cool stuff with them. I just prefer to use them. And I'm like, I don't care what you use. You need to use whatever tools work, but just be aware of what is happening. If we have 50% of our students at home, you need to be aware of what they're seeing, because what you're seeing in your classroom may not match what they're seeing. So if you use your document camera, you've got to, that first bit, you know, of streaming, be the first day, like the very first day when you're testing it out with your kids, say, okay, kids at home, I'm going to write a number. Tell me what it is. You write the number 10. And if they tell you a half second later, it's 10. Great. If they tell you in 5 seconds, it's 10, you got a problem.
Yeah.
That's all I'm talking about. It's mostly like the teacher gets a little disassociated, right? Because yep. They're seeing it on their screen. They don't realize at home what's happening. That high resolution hits the stream. The stream's lower. It gets stepped down. It gets all compressed. By the time it hits the computer at home, it's not any better than the iPad. And if it's not going to be better, it's just another device.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. Our teachers liked it because we figured we would be in one of two boats. We would either be everybody's at school or everybody is in virtual. We weren't going to have a hybrid model. We figured it was too difficult. Being a small school, we're very flexible, but also we have limited number of people. We are limited just based on our size. And so we got these document cameras because they're portable. They're very high quality. And they work with Zoom and Google Meet and Teams, and they work seamlessly with all of those, even with Big Sur, which is the latest Mac OS, which will come out November, maybe? I don't know. Sometime.
Well, Patrick, you should definitely link those up, because I personally am interested in something besides Elmo. This issue that we have with Catalina and some of these Elmo models, it's just not – like, I know Apple's hard to work with, but come
yeah.
on.
Oh, like, yeah.
And if you're on Windows, you're almost fine. If you're on Catalina,
yep.
you're barely making it. And I've even had to use like software designed for microscopes to get them to work.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you what, that's not the same stuff.
It's not. So our cameras that we bought, and I wrote a review about them, is the iPivo.
Yeah, yeah.
And they make a bunch of them. And ours was the one with the battery pack. I think it's the ZVX. Or VZX, something like that. And they work with Catalina. They work with Big Sur because we have one of our persons in technology department is running the Big Sur beta, and it works on his computer. And they update – their software goes through the Mac App Store. So you can always know it's going to work. And they actually update it quite often. I think since in July when we got them, there's been 7 or 8 just updates, some adding some features, some fixing bugs. I mean, so they're not as big as Elmo, but it's not as nice as an Elmo camera, I will say, but I think for the value, it's just as good as the Elmo camera you would buy for that same price.
Yeah. Yeah, so. There's very few circumstances where going up to that Elmo resolution or adding those Elmo features is going to actually result in a different learning outcome. And your cameras are portable. Like some of these Elmos, man, you can't move them.
Oh, they're huge. They're huge.
And
they're tanks.
I think some teachers tried to take them home. And, you know, if they break or anything, there's nothing you can do. So if everybody had to teach from home with an Elmo, it's just too hard. So you need something lighter and more portable.
We had some older Elmos. They were about 10 years old. And they're great. You know, they're tanks. They still work. But it was that scenario right there. They were taking them home. And it was they're like it just lives on my kitchen table. Like I can't. It's too big really to put anywhere else. So it just lives on the corner of my kitchen table, and we just kind of eat around it. So, but anyway, that's all the questions I have, Tony. I know you're getting low on energy there with your iPad.
Yes, I am. So I am. I'm getting low. But it is not plugged in. I'm not using any of my own strategies to help myself.
That's all right. It's okay.
Well, thanks for doing this, Patrick. I just I want to like get this out because if we have to proceed under these circumstances, I think more schools will probably look at doing hybrid high flex because at that point you're basically asking families what they're comfortable with. And, you know, if tuition matters, you're going to accommodate them. So it was hard. Like it was really frustrating. It took me a month of trials. I tested cameras and everything. And so I'm just hoping to save people some time and give them confidence because I bet a lot of people have enough iPads out there and they can get started immediately if they need to.
Yeah, and cost is always a big thing. We've had some people who some parents in our community who are like, "Why don't you do this, you know, and give people a virtual option?" And yeah, you know, $6,000 a classroom even for a small school, that adds up to over $100,000 really fast. And that's something you're not going to get a return on investment on, and when times are tough already, and less people are choosing private schools over public schools because of money. It's you really need to be very have a fiduciary responsibility to your institution to give good advice. And so, thanks, Tony. And that is what I'm saying is I think this is a very flexible, doable solution to a really tough problem.
All right, that's all I've got. And our next IT Babble hopefully will be with Keith, our lawyer friend. I'll try to get that going as soon as possible.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to Keith again. So, all right, anyway, for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony, and Patrick's obviously typing an email.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm writing a review on Lucid Spark. It'll be coming out on Monday, but I'm just inviting anyway, I'm just working on that a little bit. So anyway, we will catch you on the next podcast. So keep on babbling.